Good morning to all of you. Hernan, thanks so much for coming and choosing to invest your surely most valuable time in this meeting today. I always like to remind myself, because somehow or other I'm the one you are looking at, and I'm the one sitting in this fancy seats and supposed to say some interesting words. Let's see. That's why we invoke Mangalacharan to receive blessings, so we are instruments of grace. Still, you are coming and investing your valuable time. And Krishna says in the Gita, I am time. He's time personified. So you are giving me your time. You are giving me Krishna, because Krishna is time. So before I start opening my mouth, you're already giving me Krishna. So I'm already indebted before starting to say something. So whatever I can say is just my attempt of reciprocating, hopefully by giving some Krishna back, so to say, of all the Krishna that you're already giving. But your mere time and presence, and what to speak other ways in which the presence of the divine is coming to me through you. So deep gratitude for that. And today we have been exploring these last few mornings, of course, some of the themes of my recent book, Evolution in Divine Love, which is basically a journey, an exploration, a quest into what it means to live a life where everything is moving, is flowing, is growing, is expanding. And that's a very unique idea, right? We didn't mention that yesterday, but one of the main words for the absolute in the scriptures, especially in the Upanishads, is Brahman. Which doesn't mean impersonal absolute necessarily. Brahman can refer to the absolute. Whatever your take is on the absolute, Brahman. And Brahman comes from the Sanskrit root, that to brim. Brim means to expand or to grow. And to make other grow, that which grows and makes other grow, others grow. That's the definition of Brahman, which in itself speaks about evolution and divine love. Everything is growing and expanding. So that's the source, right? The source of reality is growing and making everyone grow. So everyone includes us. So far we have talked about love. Now, first morning meeting in constant growth and evolution and renewal, ever fresh. Yesterday, we talked about how God, the divine, the sweet absolute, as I like to refer, therefore is in constant growth and evolution. How can we speak of God updating himself in love? God becomes what love requires. You won't forget that one for sure. You may forget everything else, but that one, please don't forget. So, if love is ever evolving, if love is always growing and flowing, although we always call it love, as we say, gave the example of the river, I won't remember that name, Waitako?
Waikato.
Waikato, almost. Almost. I made the same mistake I made the other day, Waikato. So we always call the river with the same name. But the river is always new. You never bathe in the same twice in the same waters. We always refer to love, but love is always flowing in a new way. We always say Krishna, God, but Krishna is always more Krishna. Krishna means the all attractive. The all attractive is always more attractive. So Krishna is Krishnaizing himself at every moment. Though we use the same word and we chant the same name, which is never the same. That's how we all began. This book began here at the dome. Within that line of Prabhupada, the nectar of devotion. Devotees always chant the name of Krishna, but they never find, oh, I'm tired of singing the same name always. So it's always new. So God is ever fresh, ever new. God is ever fresh, ever new. Now it's our turn, the turn of the soul. No? The book tries to encompass love, God, soul, and matter. We won't have time to speak about matter here, so we are all gladly invited to join us. In our trip to the second island in New Zealand, we'll continue there. Maybe see you. If I don't see you soon, see you Zoom. See you online there, and we'll continue talking. Because that's an important chapter. I won't have time to go there, but to talk about matter and us something sacred, something holy, something alive and evolving. Interesting conversation. But today's the turn of the jiva, the turn of us, the turn of the soul. If love and God is in constant evolution, what happens to us when we connect with God through love? Well, we will realize we also have a prospect to remain in perpetual growth and evolution and expansion. So that's for me is a very enticing and exciting prospect, no? The prospect of remaining, learning and growing and expanding and developing my capacity to love and to serve and to be in awe at everything in life forever. That's like, wow, that's a relieving notion of eternity. It's a notion of eternity I can deal with. Because if you tell me in eternity you'll get to a place where you hit the rooftop, there's no further growth, no further development, no further discovery, it sounds like a dead end, an eternal dead end. Sounds like hell. Right? The more you play out the implications, like that's not heaven, that's the opposite. You're thrown into an eternity where there is no surprise and new things happening, awe, wonder, learning, growth, expansion, more love, more, no, you hit the fixed maximum. Welcome to Golok Vrindavan. That's not Golok Vrindavan. Instead, as I referred to in the third chapter of my book, where I talk about the eternal becoming of the soul, I also touch upon the spiritual world, and one name for Vrindavan is Braj. And Braj, it's also a verb that indicates to go, to move. Like when Krishna says in the Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braj. Braj, of course, we can take it as Vrindavan. We go the fanatics of Vrindavan will say, that means Vrindavan. Yes, it's okay. There's a place for that. But literally, Braj means to go. Krishna is saying, come, come to me alone. So it means to move, implies movement, Braj, the movement. So in other words, if we want to go to Braj, it's not a static realm where nothing moves, you reach perfection, I become a perfect statue in the spiritual world. Everything is moving, growing. As we say yesterday, every step is a dance, every word is a song. That's how things move in that realm forever. Vaikuntha, another word for the spiritual realm, means no limits. So again, if I say you get to the spiritual world and you cannot grow any further, that's imposing a limitation on a place that is known as no limits. There's no limits to how much you can grow in love, in transcendence. And again, when I speak about transcendence and the spiritual world, many times we tend to think that's a future destination to be attained at some point far away. But now I'm somewhere else and I have nothing to do with that. And I don't think it's entirely true to say that, or entirely healthy to draw like a division, like a spiritual world over there, maybe up beyond the clouds, far away, not here, not now. Now I'm here and now in this terrible material world. We'll try to address the idea that the material world is not as terrible as we think. And one way to do that, we can give some trailer today. One way to realize being here is not as bad is by understanding that all these goals or ideas that we have in a future time and somewhere else start here and now. As we talk these days, material world is a state of consciousness. Spiritual world is a state of consciousness. So in other words, if you are already living your life as a lover of God, as an aspirant to divine love, if you're living your life, you're engaging in bhakti, in devotional service in a sincere, healthy way, you are already there. What else? You don't have to go anywhere. You're already doing bhakti, and the goal of bhakti is bhakti. Wow, interesting, right? Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, right? Bhakti comes from bhakti, bhakti goes to bhakti. And that further bhakti goes to further bhakti and spiral ad infinitum, expanding. So that has a lot to do with the ever-evolving potential of the soul. On one side, it's not like so much I'm here, point A, planet Earth, I have to reach to point B, planet Golok Vrindavan. Once I reach there, game over. That's boring. I don't want to go there. That's not Golok Vrindavan. Thank God. So we canceled that plan. I canceled that plan long ago. Another option is I'm here, quote unquote, whatever here is, practicing bhakti, and the goal of my practice of bhakti is to continue going, growing deeper in what I'm already doing. So I'm not living my life to do something different from what I'm doing. My eternity kind of resembles my present moment. There may not be a Mac and a camera, a few things, but basically, I want to be doing forever what I'm already doing now. So in one sense, you already are there. And you can always arrive further. There's always a further arrival to the there. No? Let me share another quote from Srila Prabhupada that I was another one of these like Big Bang moments to explore this book. This connection, this is coming from this chapter, third chapter of the book, which is called Mapping the Soul's Unbroken Potential. And this is in a section called, may sound shocking, but it's Nowhere to Go and Everywhere to Arrive. In other words, it's not so much that I'm here and I need to go somewhere else. I just need to continue to arrive to where I am already are. I'm in bhakti. I need to continue to arrive to bhakti deeper, deeper, deeper. So that is not that I need to go anywhere else. So again, if you are already doing bhakti, you are there. You just need to continue arriving. You are already technically speaking in the spiritual world in some way. You are beginning to arrive there because it's a state of consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada is supporting me in this way. So he says, there is no difference between the kingdom of God and the devotional service of the Lord. Bhadra liked that one. There's no difference between the kingdom of God, spiritual world, Golok Vrindavan, you name it, and the devotional service of the Lord, which is what you are supposed to be doing already. So there's no difference. Since both of them are on the absolute plane, to be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is to have attained the spiritual kingdom. Srila Prabhupada ki Again, these are some of those quotes that we, for some reason, never read, or if we read them, sometimes they don't sink in, like, oh, Srila Prabhupada say that? Wow, interesting, good.
One similar to what we read in here too.
Okay.
Many, but
Probably is the same one. Let me see which is the, I'll tell you which is the reference. It's in, no, this is a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita 272. But we later can continue comparing notes and realize, oh, that's not only one place, it's all over the place. So yeah, that's an idea too worthy of contemplation, just to sit in with that, like if I'm practicing bhakti, bhakti is absolute, spiritual world is absolute, doing bhakti sincerely means having attained the goal. Again, the nature of the goal is ever evolving. It's Braj, it's moving, it's Vaikuntha, it's without limits. So in one sense, I have attained the goal. Again, this is paradoxical, right? In one sense, we have all the right to say, I have attained the goal, not in a proud way, but in a humbling way, by the grace of bhakti, of the bhaktas and so on. I'm doing what I want to do forever. I've attained the kingdom of God. There's a way, a place to say that, and there's a place to say, I will never fully attain the goal because the goal always keeps expanding. So you can say both things at the same time. I'm already there, and I will never be there fully because you can always be there a little bit more, a little bit more. And that's what keeps the whole thing rolling on, exciting. Because the moment we say, I attain it, I have it, then now what? Right? It becomes a problem. And if you say it's absolutely unattainable in any way, you become kind of like, oh, I'm discouraged then. There's no hope for me. But if we say, not only you can attain it, but if you say, you have already attained it, oh, right. But you can always continue to attain it in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper ways. So, in other words, as I try to mention also in my book, we could say we are already saved. Again, I'm doing what I want to do forever. We are already saved. Again, salvation is not something that you need to get by earning and deserving and like checking boxes and accumulating points. Well, sometimes we may practice that on like a scoring points. Like today, I did my 16 points, 16 round, 4 points for regulative principles, and one, whatever, 4 points extra. I woke up at 4 a.m. So at the end of the day, I have to get my 108 daily points, and I accumulating, and finally, Krishna, look my score. I perform nicely. I deserve, I earn, whatever. It doesn't work like that. So I think this perspective is more and more, I mean, it's founded in Shastra, and also is way more realistic and relieving and humbling. You know, you're already doing what you want to do forever. Welcome to eternity. Welcome, all of you. You're already there. But when we start to become a little bit comfort zone and complacent, I'm already there. But you can always further arrive there. So there's always something else to do. Oh, so that keeps me not complacent. I remember 2 years ago, no, last year. That was last year. Still last year. We are in 2025 still. We live in the future here in New Zealand, but not that much in the future. Still 2025. 2024, I had visited Father Richard Rohr, as I had visited him this year, and I had visited him 2023. That was my second visit, and he was conducting a retreat, and it was almost the closing of the retreat, and he was invited to, like to, and probably it's here somewhere, and I will need to find the quote. And he was invited to, yeah, I need to check where. To say a blessing at the end, a closing blessing for the retreat or something. Yeah, I like to find it literally because it's very beautiful how he put it. Anyhow, I'll find it eventually for you. But he says something like, and I have it recorded in his own voice, and he say like, he started to pray to God, and he say, "May." Something like, may you protect us from the idea that we need to be saved. That's how he started, right? It's like, wow, that's really a blessing. Wow, interesting. Like, may we stop thinking that we need to be saved. May we stop being bothered about when I'll be saved. Something like that. May we stop asking the question when I'll be saved. So we can concentrate on more important things. Like implying you're already saved. Like he was talking to a group of dedicated pilgrims. So may we stop getting like obsessed when I will be saved. Put that question aside so you can really concentrate on better questions. And I like that was a blessing, basically. That was a closing. I was like, wow. So which could be better questions, you know? Because sometimes we may think of what's the real question is salvation. But again, our tradition is not about salvation, but mukti in one sense. Bhakti already includes mukti, and you're already doing here and now What do you want to be doing for eternity? Like when Sanatana Goswami is starting to inquire from Mahaprabhu, there's this famous conversation between Sanatana Goswami and Mahaprabhu. It's called Sanatana Siksha, or the instructions to Sanatana Goswami by Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And how the whole conversation begins is very interesting, because Sanatana Goswami says to Mahaprabhu, "By your grace, I'm liberated from the entanglement of material world. So please tell me what's my duty." Now, if you understand properly that question, he's asking, what's my duty after liberation? Right? He starts the conversation acknowledging I'm liberated. Not from any proud way, like who you think you are to say it. By your grace, Sriman Mahaprabhu, I'm saved. If you want to use liberation as equal to save, by your grace, I'm saved. What's my duty post salvation? What's my post salvation? That's the beginning of the conversation. Interesting, right? What's my duty after liberation? Because you shouldn't, as Richard Rohr said, you shouldn't be bothered about whether I get saved or not. That's already happening by Mahaprabhu's grace. So the real question is not when I'm getting saved, but what I'm being saved for. Not will I get saved or not? How will I get saved? When I will get saved? Send all those to the trash bin. We already saved, so now the question is, what to do with my salvation? How, what I'm being saved for? Not what I'm being saved from. That's still a negative-oriented question. I'm being saved from all this. What I'm being saved for? And then comes, it'll be a long answer. Then comes Mahaprabhu's instruction to Sanatana Goswami, what you are being saved for. And then comes a detailed description of bhakti, which again, bhakti is technically speaking a post-liberated status. It lies beyond mukti, it lies beyond salvation. It's your positive offering beyond salvation, positive loving dedication. What I'm being saved for? To dedicate your heart positively, fully, lovingly. That's why Prabhupada's saying transcendental loving devotional service is not different from the kingdom of God. That's what everyone is doing in the kingdom of God, dedicating their life lovingly. Nobody is asking about salvation. You'll never hear in the conversation of the gopis and the gopas mukti. That word doesn't exist in the dictionary in Vrindavan. Mukti. They are so far beyond mukti that they lost sight that such a thing exists. Right. That's why Rupa Goswami say one of the symptoms of bhakti is moksha laguta krit, advanced bhakti, bhava bhakti, which is moksha, mukti, salvation becomes insignificant. That's bhava bhakti. Probably prem bhakti, salvation, you lost completely sight of that, stops existing because you are too way beyond that. You are too concerned with answering the question, what I'm being saved for. You're too busy serving. Well, like sometimes the devotee will say, like commenting on the Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter, where we find different examples of yogis trying to die in certain particular moments of the year under certain auspicious constellations to attain certain realms. Some commentators, when it comes the turn to speak about the Vaishnava, the Bhakta, how will they plan their death? And it's like they don't plan it at all. They were too busy offering themselves in love. And they happened to die during that. And they probably didn't even notice that they died because they were too busy loving and serving. Some commentators will say that. You were so absorbed in loving and serving that, oh, you are dying biologically. Oh, okay. That's like, I don't have time for that serving. It's no longer a concern. I know it's difficult to imagine. For some people, that's their concern. If they're concerned about something, at some point, I'm leaving this body. But when we go deeper and deeper into the reality of the soul, into our potential in love, you lose sight of that. You lose sight of death, of salvation, of all that stuff, because you are too busy doing more important things, loving unlimitedly. So that's very interesting. perspective that our tradition gifts us with. And again, all that speaks about who you are and all that you can be again. And I think this is very important for us also to build a robust case of self-esteem and self-acceptance and self-love. Like, who you actually are is a unit of unlimited potential in love, which is pretty amazing. And that's what we should identify ourselves with. Because, of course, we have our, we were talking yesterday, we still have some psycho-emotional brokenness or wounds, but that's not who we are. Still, we are identified with that. We need to deal with that in the context of being identified with that, and it's fine. But this, the Atma, the soul, is not broken. It's not fragmented. It's not the core of our being. Is the only word Krishna has for that is amazing, wondrous, no? Acharya. He used this word three times, Bhagavad Gita 2:29. You are wondrous. We are wondrous. You're wonderful, amazing, miraculous. Wow. That's what Krishna says when he sees you. Wow. Confirmed. Wow. Again, it sounds too good to be true, and let's be honest, many of us have trouble in accepting that's true. Krishna says, wow, while looking at me. Come on. I mean, I look at me and I say, sometimes I'm almost about to vomit. And Krishna is saying, wow. It's good that to put those things in the contrast to see, like, if I think that I'm disgusting, so unfortunately, sometimes we think like that about ourselves, about who we think we are. And Krishna is finding us wonderful. So that should create some curiosity about what is he seeing? Because probably, I mean, I don't think he's saying wow to what I'm seeing. So what is he seeing? And trusting that what he is seeing is a way more accurate picture than what we may be seeing. We have to have that kind of trust and confidence. Okay, how God is seeing me, that's the most realistic possible way I can be ever seen. Again, Krishna say, well, I see you, and I say, wow, you're wonderful. Three times. So he's in the Atman, he's in the potential of the Atman, because who we are is Tathasta Shakti. It's a unit of loving potential. It's who we are plus all that we can be. Krishna is saying all that and saying, wow, wow. And remember, Bhagavad Gita, first he says what the Atman is not. You're going to be killed, burned, dried, etc. When it comes to say who we are, he only can say three times, wow. Wow. Acharya, acharya, acharya. So this should create some curiosity. Now, what is he seeing? We should say wow to his wow. Wow. He says wow to me. Wow. What's that? That's why the Bhagavatam say we should learn to see reality through the eyes of God himself. I mean, we are not God. We cannot fully enter into God's shoes. But somehow we can get as close as we can to that. And try to empathize. How is Krishna seeing me? How is Krishna seeing everything? How can I, how to say, honor, represent, embrace that vision? So again, Krishna is saying, and not only Krishna, of course, those who are real seers of truth, Tattva Darshan. That's why a guru is described as a Tattva Darshan in the scriptures, a seer of things as they are. And that's why Srila Maharaj will say, guru is your own potential appearing in front of you. The guru is your own potential appearing in front of you, and that person is seeing your own potential and trying to encourage you to become all that you can be. Because Guru is a Tattva Darshan, a seer of things as they are. So a real guru, a real teacher, a real well-wisher is seeing us for who we actually are, which includes all that we can be in our brightest prospect. That's how we are being seen by Krishna, by sadhus, by enlightened people. We are being seen for who we actually are, which means all that we can be in love. So they have to say wow after saying that. Like, wow. And they will try to support us to actualize our potential. Because if we have something potential, doesn't mean that we are already there fully. But that potential is there. Einstein will say, whenever you analyze what something is, you have to include what that something could be also. What you are plus what you can become. Being plus becoming. We are human beings, we're human becomings also. We are potency, Tathasta Shakti, Jiva Shakti, we are Shakti, we are potency, energy. Every potency has potential to become. Right? We cannot speak about the potency without potential. That makes no sense. No, there's this potency, but has no potential to do anything. There's you cannot call it a potency. So any potency has potential. Potential implies becoming something else in connection to what you are, plus becoming. Being plus becoming. Trying to use all the words I can from the dictionary and different examples and perspective, hopefully you get one of those. And you can at least, and we can, hopefully I can get one of those because I may talk a lot, but another thing is to internalize these things. And we can really live those truths. Okay. I am, Krishna says you are amazing. Hopefully there comes a day when I can look at the mirror and say, I am amazing. And believe it in a humble way, in a humbling way. I'm amazing. I'm not my own creation, so I have no reasons to be proud of that. I happen to be amazing. As do all of you. Well, that's the important part also. It's not like I'm amazing, but you are not amazing. I am I happen to be the only one unique Atma in the whole creation, which is amazing. No. That verse of the Gita was not only dedicated to you. It was dedicated to you. The love letter to each soul, you're amazing, 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 and to every other soul as well. So we have that potential, no? That's a very interesting idea to think in terms of potential, to live our lives in terms of potential. I always like to recall this line from Srila Siddhar Maharaj when he will tell one of his disciples, he will see him and penetrate that person with his glance of unconditional love. And as I was saying, Guru is seeing us for all that we are and all that we can be in potential. So he was sitting in front of a disciple, and probably the disciple was, well, not feeling, not in the best day, feeling a little inadequate in the presence of Guru, whatever. And he said, your future is brilliant. Sounded like a prophecy to each one of us. Your future is brilliant. And you may say, but my present is a mess. Yes, but your future is brilliant. But no, we have so many arguments, right? To prove that our future is not brilliant, to prove that we are horrible, that we are not amazing. There are so many sometimes toxic narratives coming, trying to make a convincing case that we are nothing close to amazing. And our real world wishers, we keep saying, your future is brilliant. Because of who you are in your essence, in your potential. Of course, we need to actualize our potential. All the things I'm talking is not to promote laziness. Oh, I'm amazing. My future is brilliant. I'm already doing what I want to do forever. I'm in eternity. Let me take a break from this lifetime. No. It's an invitation to even engage from a deep, more committed way, from a more responsible way. and to honor the gift of who we are. That's the interesting thing about unconditional love. Like, okay, I happen to be amazing. I'm not my own creation. I'm unconditionally loved by Krishna. I did nothing to deserve that. All that's coming. I'm already saved. So if you're honest, you will have what to do now. What to do with all that? With all those matchless gifts. No wonder Prabhupada said, don't take that sign off. Right? No, but it's a hippie sign with psychedelic typo, matchless gifts. It should say Krishna. No. Leave matchless gifts where it is, because here we are dealing with matchless gifts. It's in plural. No? It's not a matchless gift, it's matchless gifts. So the real question is what to do with that. No? Like Mahaprabhu was saying in the second verse of Shikshastakam, that's a beautiful verse. And that beautiful verse speaks mostly to all of us because it's a verse that represents the stages of bhajana, kriya, and anartha, nivritti, where most of us are, to be honest. And the verse, there Mahaprabhu, the first three lines of that verse is deep appreciation and gratitude for the matchless gifts. Nam nam kari bahu dhaniya sarva shakti stathar pitaniya mitasmaranena kala itadrishitava kripa bhagavan mamapi. Oh Bhagavan, your mercy is such that you are giving me, providing your names, unlimited names, uncountable names, all filled with all your potencies, no hard fast rules to chant them. Wow, there you have matchless gifts. If you play out the implication, what you are giving yourself, because the name is not different from Bhagavan. So you are giving yourself in such an abundant, graceful way, not making it at all difficult for me to approach you. Yet, Durdaiva Midrisham Bihai Janinanura. Yeah, I am having difficulty in dealing with these gifts because it's too much. I'm not accustomed to it sounds too good to be true. I'm not accustomed to being gifted with so much. So somehow sadhana bhakti we'll talk about that in the morning with some devotees. Sadhana bhakti is training ourselves to learn how to deal with unconditional love, the amount of gifts we are being showered with, to start to believe that that's actually true. That's not an exaggeration. It's happening. Matchless gifts. Acknowledging them, receiving them, returning the embrace. So Mahaprabhu makes that case in the second verse of Shikshastakam. Three lines first, deep gratitude, deep appreciation. Not one line and three lines of lamentation. Three lines of first, deep positive appreciation and gratitude, and being showered up with so many matchless gifts. And then what to do, how to reciprocate them, and the humility when we sometimes fall short of reciprocating with that. No, it's part of the journey. It's okay. So, but still, we cannot but try again. No, we cannot but try again and try again and try again. And even when we start to try and try and we become better at trying and better at reciprocating and returning the embrace and replying to the question why I'm being saved for, the more we become more accomplished in that, still the nature of love is ever evolving. There's always room for more progress. We will never reach a point where we say, I don't have anything else to give back to unconditional love. There's no other way for me to return the embrace. No, there are unlimited ways. There's one nice quote from Srila Sridhar Maharaj in this regard. Let me see if I can find it. Now I'm finding other quotes. Tempting, tempting. Let's make a brainstorm of heart storm of different quotes from different people. Srila Sridhar Maharaj says, It's a paragraph, but just the first line will maybe give you heart attack or something, in a good sense. Too much heart into it. We are always situated within infinite possibility. Stay with that one for a moment. We're always situated within infinite possibility. Therefore, our prospect, life after life, cannot be finished so easily. It's another way of saying there's always room for further growth and progress. A seeker who is after the truth will search after newer and newer planes, and that means living and accommodating new experiences. We are to become more and more accommodating, earnest, and eager. Progress means leaving our former position and going on to something else. Progress means leaving our former position and going to a new quest, a new level. Only one who is hopeful of a brighter future can leave his former position and advance. Don't get distracted. Important stuff going on here. I need my tin, 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 tin. Only one who is hopeful of a brighter future can leave his former position and advance. That's an interesting point because, again, as we were talking yesterday, our previous experience of God is usually our greatest obstacle to the next experience. In order to embrace ever-evolving potential of the soul, we need to leave our former version of ourselves behind and move to the next one, and then to the next one. And it's an ongoing cycle of release and ex embrace, release and embrace. And he says, only one who is hopeful of a brighter future will be willing to leave the current situation for something else. Because if you don't, if you are not sure, is there anything else better over there? I stay here, right? And it's okay if we feel that way, we cannot be forced to jump to the next stage. I don't know what's on the next chapter. I need to. Srila Maharshi will say at other times, if you are not sure if where you are jumping to will be safe land, okay, you may need to stay what is safe for you so far for some time, not forever. But eventually, as we grow, as we progress, we develop more faith. And there's a point where you have so much faith that you are absolutely sure that there's always something brighter waiting for you, the next step. So it becomes less and less difficult to move and to jump and to open the door to the new invitation because you trust, your faith is big enough to trust that Krishna is in your favor. As simple as that sounds, that reality is not conspiring against you. But in the beginning, if we don't have that realization, it's healthy not to force ourselves also. Because if you push yourself to have absolute faith when you don't have it, it may feel like too much making certain quantum leaps to something that I don't know if I can do that, right? So, but it's important to know that our faith should grow. And faith, again, by faith, I don't mean some mental conviction that I hope it will be better, but grounded, rooted in experience, you know? Living, having experiences that prove to us, okay, Krishna is trustworthy. As simple as that sounds, God is trustworthy, life is trustworthy, bhakti is trustworthy. This person is trustworthy. So I open more, a little bit more, a little bit more, new one step, two. There is a point that I'm no longer questioning. Is it trustworthy or not? But because I have so much experience and faith that environment is friendly, in Srila Siddhartha Maharaj's words. So I'm on a journey that always is inviting me to a new version of myself, and I'm always trusting there's a brighter future waiting on the other side. Even if we don't have the full realization of that now, at least to know in theory that that's waiting for us, hopefully that's hopeful for. Yeah. You see, I was going to do some heartstorming, not brainstorming. It's not a brainy thing. Which one? Where shall we go? Let's go to a quote by T.S. Eliot. Explore writers and poets from different schools. He said, "We shall," this is a famous line, probably the most famous line from T.S. Eliot. "We shall not cease from exploration. And the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." It's one of the famous poems of T.S. Eliot. So the end of our exploration, somehow we arrive what we started, but we are knowing that place for the first time. In other words, we are not moving just in circles, but like spirals. So we may come again to similar places, but with new eyes. We may come back home, but transform. That's the whole pattern of the hero's journey, right? You leave home, you leave the familiar, you go out in the wilderness, into the unknown, confront the dragons that are waiting for you there, no? Conquer it or integrate the lessons and return home with renewed vision. So home is not, it's the same place, but it's not, you're not seeing the same place. It's a new thing. I think that's important in our spiritual journey because many times we may feel, oh, again here? No, like I'm again here. And we may start to doubt the whole thing. Like, I've been practicing for the last decades and I just did a circle move and I'm again in the same place. Like, I'm zero progress. And we can really get convinced of that. And well, that's not true. Probably we're just re-exploring the same place with renewed eyes. We are not the same person, and there are so many new lessons to learn. And we may need to go there many times, but again, not moving in circles but in spiral, which is circular moving but expanding. So yeah, there's always something. That's why I chose to put this symbol in the cover of the book. There is some kind of spiral, colorful movement. So Yeah, that's invitation to be, in Srila Siddhartha Maharaj's words, to be members of the dynamic world. And there's a price to pay for that, which is I'm willing to remain a student forever. That's kind of the price to pay. You cannot come here as a master. Nobody here is a master. Nobody. Not even Krishna. Everyone is a student of love. Everyone is exploring, discovering. That's very humbling to hear. No? In the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, I'm not even fully aware of the extent of my own qualities. There are just too much. It's too much. I don't know. I'm still exploring them. No? Like Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is Krishna wanting to understand Radha's heart that he couldn't in Vrindavan. I'm not fully sure what's going on there. I need to explore and discover. So Mahaprabhu is Krishna in this very curious moment, exploratory moment. So if that's for God, what to speak for us, right? And that's invitation to continue to grow. And hopefully we can have a glimpse of all that here and now. Again, this is not just things to keep in our head for a future lifetime, but to apply in the here and now, how I'm living my bhakti journey, I'm living my life. I'm open to learn. I'm open to grow. I'm feel a student like a child, learning everything, seeing everything for the first time. Like T.S. Eliot will say, a child will have that vision. It's like everything is like, ooh. We won't take generally a bag and start living. Oh, it's like. We take for granted a bag with pencil and a mosquito cream and all that boring stuff, headache pills. It's like, we know it's and no further exploration. A chest now. It's a whole planetary system inside. So to say, right? And so only those who are like children will enter the kingdom of God, right? Bible says that. Rig Veda says exactly the same thing, interestingly. So we have to be willing to pay that price to inhabit the kingdom of God, to remain in that humbling space of wonder and learning and surprise and discovery. That's what keeps the eternal journey exciting. Because again, if we take out all those elements, all wonder, surprise, learn, discovery, and you just have like a dead end, know it all, experience it all, no further growth, progress, expansion for eternity. Who wants to go there? Only a bunch of masochists. No, perpetual masochism. You won't come here. That's not what it is. So it's important that we have a proper conception of how life looks like in eternity, so we can already live that life here now. So I start to live my life as I plan to live my life in eternity. So your lifestyle, I mentioned that also in the book, we have to gradually learn to live our lives in such a way that your lifestyle here is sustainable in eternity. It's coherent enough that at one point, your lifestyle here and eternity, there is no longer a dividing line between the two. You are living your life in a way that aligns in such a way with eternal prospect that you are fully there. And you can continue to arrive. But my point is, that's how you attain the spiritual world. No, it's not like some magical mothership coming to New Zealand and we are coming to take you for Golok Vrindavan. Whoever wants to come, pick your number at the desk. It's 108. And then you go there and you arrive. Okay, what's here? What to do? I don't have a clue. Who am I? Your name is this, and you have been assigned to the department, service department, this in Vatsalya Bhav, and you will be receiving further instructions eventually. That's not happening. We start to enter there here now. We start to participate here now. That's how you attain the spiritual world. Here and now, or nowhere at all. No magical thinking here, please. But I'm waking up every morning from Mangalore. I'm checking all my boxes. I'm acquiring my merit points per day, my 108 merit points per day. Everything is in place. By force, I need to be taken there, of course. I have to do. No, it doesn't work like that. It's not a number checking boxes, it's what's going on in your inner world, right? If you have your heart in the right place, 1 second is enough to attain perfection, ever-evolving perfection. 1 second. That's what Parikshit Maharaj Sukadev Goswami at the beginning of the Bhagavad. He came with the concern, I have only 7 days. So the question was, is this enough time for me to attain what I would like to attain? And Sukadev Goswami kind of chuckled. Like 7 days, he was overwhelmed by 7 days. That's too much. 7 days to attain perfection. That's so too much time to attain perfection. Why you will take so much time? Is it 1 second of proper presence, of having the heart in the right place, 1 second gives you full access to that reality. It's not about quantity, not about time, numbers. Of course, generally it takes time because we may not be able to fully be in that quality space now. But in principle, that's possible. That's why scripture says, sadhu sangha sarva shastra koi lava matra. Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi Hoy. Only 1 nanosecond of Sadhu Sangha gives you all perfection. 1 nanosecond? I already have like hours and hours and days and months of Sadhu Sangha. And I can tell you perfection is not yet there here. Well, the point is, what was the quality of not only of the Sadhu Sangha in terms of the other person, but our own openness and presence to that. Because if you have all the ideal conditions in place, it just takes 1 nanosecond. And even if we may say, I'm not there yet, but even if you have enough, how to say, quality sadhu sangha, you could have a glimpse of that perfection. All perfection is attained in the sense that if you have a moment of genuine sadhu sangha, there's no coming back from that. No, that already starts your way toward full perfection, even if it may take time. But you had a glimpse, in 1 nanosecond glimpse of what is going on there. That's it. You are on your way. So, yeah, that's where we are. That's who we are. That's what this soul is. That's the beautiful, eternal potential of the soul. And I think it's very important for us to be identified with that, to learn to develop more sense of, hey, that's who I am. Not all these other incomplete, partial, toxic, fragmented narratives that sometimes we tell ourselves, some other people may tell about ourselves, social media will tell, all this crazy pressure to look perfect, be perfect, everything, to Photoshop your, not only your body, but your psychic body, and everything has to be like, well, that's not required. Om Purnamada Purnamida, you're already complete. Soul is complete, God is complete, the world is complete. We are just looking into another direction. When you look at what the soul is, Krishna said, well, you are amazing. He won't say amazing at something incomplete, something broken. Of course, we can attain further completeness by embracing bhakti and the further becoming of completeness. But it's important to realize all that we already are, again, in a humble, humble, and humbling way. Okay. So, any questions, any comments, something you would like to share? I know we shared a little bit, a lot, new ideas probably for some of you, some of us. They're always new, ever new. So, yeah. Interdarshi.
I'll try and formulate this. Sort of had it before.
Yeah.
Just this idea that we're already there. Well, that you talk about, we're talking about divine love. But I mean, I could easily, well, the term love can easily be diverted to something it's not. And so, you've obviously, and specifically in your book, tried to explain some, obviously, some terms which have Sanskrit origins and easily understandable English terminology, like, you obviously called it divine love, not love, meaning
See the title, Divine Love.
Krishna prema,
Mm-hmm.
not some sort of material, or prema put a sharira or something. So my understanding is that, we're not, there's, okay, we have sadhana bhakti, then bhava bhakti, and then prema bhakti. Is that Jiva Goswami, I think? One of them said sadhya and sadhana.
Yeah.
I forget which one. One of them said sadhana, bhava, and prema. So, in one sense, bhakti is bhakti. And you have to jump in the river at some point. And that's for us, and who are Bahumukha, sorry, yeah, Bahumukha. externally looking, not interlocker. That's sadhana, whatever, under the guidance of the guru. And so, I understand. I don't have bhav yet. And how do I want I like what you're saying, how we're performing bhakti, we're performing what we will be doing in eternity, and that's nice to hear, and I don't disagree with that. However, I still have the doubt that I'm still in this sadhana stage, and how do I see that in terms of how do I connect that, like actually connect where I am now to where I can be?
Well, thank you for the question first. And of course, again, as I try to clarify, when I say you're already saved, you already attained the goal, I'm not literally saying you are in Bhava Bhakti and you're in Prema Bhakti, but you are on the way to all that. And if you, as I trust you are, and all of you are sincerely trying to pursue the Bhakti path with our limitations, but at the same time, sincerely trying to be a lover of God, walk that path. It's just a matter of time that you are getting there. So I think it's healthy to have that type of confidence that I'm on the way to all that. Even if I'm not there, it's like, okay, I'm taking a car to, we're going later today to the beach. We're on the car. We are not on the beach yet, but we're on the way to the beach, and we know we'll be there. Of course, something may happen in between. But in the case of bhakti, if we pursue bhakti sincerely, even if something happens, there's full success warranted in so many parts of the scriptures. Like there's no loss nor diminution in what you are doing, and this, and I mean, so many, I can torture you with endless verses about how the scripture gives this reassurance that if you embrace bhakti sincerely, you will be successful. It may take some time, of course. I'm not saying it's next weekend. It may take lifetimes. But again, who cares for that? We shouldn't care for that. Because bhakti is not about, again, when I get liberated and the time. So again, I agree. I'm not saying like, I don't know, you already have prema bhakti there. But in one sense, we could say you have received the seed of bhakti, which ultimately includes all of that. We may have yet been the gardening process till the fruits. I mean, to use some language and some analogies that like Mahaprabhu did, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. By the grace of Guru and Krishna, you receive the seed of divine, of the vine, of bhakti, of divine bhakti. And then it starts the gardening process, right? First, the seed is being extended. Well, first you have to receive the gift, the seed, because I can maybe giving you the seed and you're like, I don't know if I take that. Like the famous Michelangelo picture of God extending, and the human is like, I don't know, I'm not sure. So you have to receive the seed, prepare the soil before you even put in the seed. Is there is soil? It's just concrete, cement. You have to find some good soil, put the seed, water the seed, uproot what looks like the original vine, but it's not. We know all this analogy. But in one seed, in one sense, eventually comes the flowers, eventually comes the fruit, bhava and prem. But in one sense, all that is in the seed. Right? So in one sense, we have received that seed by the grace of Guru and Krishna. So in that sense, you could say, as much as you can say the flowers and the fruits are in the seed, in that sense you can say bhava and prem are already with you in the form of the seed that you have received, and that we are doing the sadhana gardening before reaching sadhya, bhava prem, we are sadhana. Okay, but already we are in the gardening process, and the flowers and the seed are waiting to manifest if as long as I'm a good gardener. So Again, I'm not literally saying you have already achieved. Again, I may have the seeds here. It doesn't mean I can. I have a seed of a mango tree. It doesn't mean that I eat the seed off. That this mango is so relishable. You are not relishing the mango. But in that seed, there is the relishment of the mango if you know what to do with the seed. In that sense, I'm saying that's already there. Beta bet. It's already there. It's not yet there. But it's already there. But it's not yet there. So the part of it's already there, I think, gives us reassurance, trust, confidence. I'm already on the journey. And the part is not yet there means invites me to do my part as a gardener, know what to do with this seed that I've received, and eventually that will happen. But even if we are talking about, let's say you already achieved prem, let's put that hypothetical scenario. Still, if you have achieved prem, still prem continues to develop infinitely. So in one sense, you will never feel you have attained the goal. So that's an important point to add. Now I can at least honestly say, I've not achieved prem. I can be honest with you, do this public confession in front of the camera. For those who are over-idealizing Swami Padmanabha, I'm not there. But the paradox is, if at some point I'm there, I won't feel I'm there. Because the nature of love is such that you can always love so much more that you will never fail to say, I already get it. As I quoted Mahaprabhu the other day, Na prema gandha shtidarapi meharo. In me, there is not even the aroma of prema. Mahaprabhu is saying that. So that's the paradox of love. You can never claim it. The moment you say, I have it, you don't have it. It's like humility. The moment you say, I'm so humble. Sorry, you're out of the competition. So it's very counter affirmative. If you affirm it, it's no longer there. So the only way you can have it is by not feeling you have it. It's very, very interesting. And that's why Sanatana Goswami says between prem and dainya, love and humility, divine love and humility, are cause and effect of one another. So the more love you have, the more humble you become. And the more humble you become, the more love you have. But the more love you have, the more humble you become. And that more increased humility never allows you to say, I have it now. So it's very interesting dynamic. So I'm saying that in connection to, even if we cannot genuinely say now, I'm not in bhava, I'm not in prem, okay. But when you are there, you won't be able to say that either from a different place, because you will be like confronted. There is this quote from Srila Siddharth that I include here also, that let me see, I have to read that one because it's important. Well, I read it. It's basically the one that I say, like, the closer you get to the infinite, there are many similar ones, the more you realize there's no limit to progress. Now, the closer I get to the infinite, I realize there's no limit to how much progress I can. So I can never claim I made progress because there's so much more. I cannot say I'm loving now. I mean, I will say that in the stage we are now, it's healthy to say that love has come to our lives in some degree or another. I think it's healthy. When you are immersed in the madness of divine love, probably you will be saying things that there's no love in me at all. But that's from a healthy, mad perspective. But we cannot imitate that. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his song, Amar Jivan, he said, I am full of lust. What does he mean with that? Is he actually full of lust? No, you study his life and that. I mean, he's not full of lust. So he's writing the song thinking about us so we can identify vicariously with his lyrics. I don't think so. I think he's like calculating. I'll write this song so these guys who are actually full of lust can identify with my songs. Doesn't come from that like professional performative composition place. So he's genuinely feeling that. So, but he's not full of lust. So how to make sense of that? The conclusion I can make is he has so much love that, and you can just see some pictures of Bhakti Thakur. Just in the picture, you know, he's full of love. I mean, just a picture. What to speak, getting to know his life. So there's so much love. I mean, I have love, but there's so much more love that I can have that by comparison, all the love that is there to be honored, not only to be had, again, like if I will have love, but love to be served, love to be loved. There's so much more than in contrast with the love I have, which may be prem bhakti, incredible, beautiful, but in contrast, I feel I'm full of lust. Like a very ecstatic, paradoxical expression. So, but where we are now, I won't say it's healthy to copy paste Bhaktivinoda Thakur and bring a whip and I'm full of lust and I'm full of love. It may end up getting us depressed and abandoning the whole process. So there are different things to say and think according to different stages. So we have to be careful not to imitate. So I think for most of us in our stage, it's very healthy to first of all cultivate the foundational sense of self-worth, that you are loved and accepted by Krishna. The soul is wonderful in a humbling way. Love came to my life. Bhakti came to my life. Divine love came to my life in seed form. I'm doing the gardening work. So many reasons to celebrate about it. So bring all this positive content and appreciation. And that gradually will take us to all different ecstatic experiences of divine madness, where we may end up saying some crazy things, like, I have no love, I'm full of lust. Not insulting those who are saying that, just like they're coming from a crazy place in the good sense of craziness, divine madness, right? That we cannot imitate now. So I don't know if that makes sense.
So yeah, I mean, it seemed like so. There's a pre. This what it seems to me. There's a pre-liberation or pre-prema bhakti evolution going on, and then there's a post. And I have another question, which is like, how do material feelings and emotion, material, whatever, the bhavas or emotions and feelings we have now that we're identifying with our sarira and our manas and body and sankhara, how useful are they in, I don't know, imagining is the right approach, but thinking about, you know, say our relationship with Krishna, or just how, what the evolution, what how they take, you know, should, I guess my question is coming from the point place of, you know, bypassing where we neglect our gross and subtle body and actually can't, you know, end up numb and can't actually appreciate the leelas, I guess, right? Which is actually not really understanding or appreciating the leela.
Of course,
Did that question makes it, is that a question?
if that
Did I phrase this then?
it is to my ears,
Okay, good.
it's a question and it's a quest. It's a question that sets it on a long quest, an important one. There's so much to say about that. And of course, in radical personalism, I speak a lot about it because it's an important question. And in brief, what I can say now, because we are approaching the sacred lunchtime. But of course, we are not yet fully enlightened, and we may have different emotions, and some of them are not expressing themselves in the most enlightened possible way, but we cannot force ourselves to be fully enlightened when we are not. So we have what we have, whatever it is. Not like something, oh, we have what we have. It's accepting where we are, no? Acknowledging our adhikar. That's where we have all these preliminary, I don't want to say pre-bhakti, but preliminary notions in terms of bhakti of accept your adhikar, your nature, no? Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita about, and what's your acquired nature, and do not escape from that. Do not deny that. Krishna in the Gita say even the wise people act according to their nature. So he's not saying, okay, that's for us, we have to accept our nature. But the wise, they somehow become completely different from how they were become before being wise. No, they act according to their nature. But now they are aware of their nature, and that includes emotions, mind, all these different dimensions, and they integrate all that gradually into bhakti. It's not that we need to stop feeling, to stop experiencing anything. It's just we need to learn to express everything as more and more aligned with bhakti. And bhakti doesn't mean stop being human, as we always say. Bhakti doesn't mean stop being human. Means become fully human. So you have emotions that basically make you a human being. A big part of being a human means experiencing a whole set of emotions that are experienced in a very unique way in the human species. So becoming fully human is learning to experience all those things fully. Not stop experiencing all those things, so I become transcendental. You didn't become transcendental, you became like a numbed cyborg or something. So I have all these emotions. How to experience them fully? And fully means also in the most, in the healthiest way. Now, fully doesn't mean I'm angry, so the fullest expression of my anger is I become a serial killer. No, that's not the point. Okay, you have anger. Anger, yeah. How to express my anger? Fully. Again, fully doesn't mean I will burn down the city. How to do it in the most enlightened possible way, as much as I can where I am. And there is a big body of knowledge and guidance in our tradition and other even secular disciplines that could be complementary. Psychology has nothing. Psychology is not an art or has something against bhakti. I mean, there's lots of psychology in the Vedic tradition, so we have nothing against psycho-emotional healing. Actually, it's a very important, even if you want to call it a preliminary work before ecstatic love. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's like a healthy foundation. No, sattva, we can use the word sattva. Let's try to live a sattvic life and from that pursue spirituality and transcendence in a realistic way, not bypassing way. Because if we are not fully, relatively fully healed and integrated, we may be approaching spirituality not for the right reasons, probably. We may be putting some religious masks, worshiping God to cover up, to make up for some unresolved stuff. And so gradually, in the very practice of bhakti, those things should come to the surface and you have to deal with that. No? So yeah, we all have emotions and we are all invited to, as I mentioned in radical personalism, they're not bad emotions. They're no bad emotions. They're only bad things we do with our emotions. Emotions are not bad, good, they are. So we are invited to deal with them in an enlightened way. And when we attain perfection, so to say perfection again, I don't want to sound, put it like perfection is the end, it's an end thing. We find that all these emotions are there in the spiritual world. Right? You study, I don't know, the secondary rasas in connection to Krishna. You have fear, you have anger, you have laughter, you have wonder, awe and wonder, you have disgust. You have many of them are quote unquote negative, but they are not disposable. They're like there's a place for everything, all the emotions in the world of love, so to say. So how we reach there is by here and now starting to give a place to all those emotions as a bhakta in my life. In my pursuit of love, how do I express my fear or my doubts or my anger or my happiness or my anxiety? How do I acknowledge that and deal with that and relate to that in a way that is properly integrated and makes me fully human so I can become fully divine and fully human? It's Naralila. That's our goal. And Naralila is human lila. Human lila means you have to be a human. Doesn't mean just I have the human body, but are you a human? So the body is to facilitate an experience. So I hope that helps, some summarized version of it. Of course, there's way more to explore, but thank you for the question. And we put the sharing to rest. Shri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Pramanand. Thank you so much to all of you on this side of New Zealand for those, because this is our last official gathering, at least in terms of sharing Harikatha on this side of the country. Some of you will continue our adventures to the other island, but to those who cannot come, deep gratitude for taking the time of coming here. Thank you, Patrak, Valaran, Raturupa family, hosting us, holding space, creating the vessel for sharing these days, and looking forward for more adventures together.
On behalf of all of us and us, our family, thank you very much for coming. Like I think I heard Ananda saying yesterday, you have New Zealand, you have South Island, then you have Little Nelson, you know, the levels, you're perfect, more perfect, most perfect. You have small, more small, most small. We're in sort of the most small category to find
So this is the
humans.
most perfect of all. That was you wanted to mean. No other place on planet Earth is as perfect as here. So Marash, cancel all your travel plans. Thank you. Thank you.
But just for your whole presentation, it's so refreshing. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being open to my exploration of ideas, and I'm making you part of that. It's basically something like that. I'm exploring something and I'm grabbing whomever is close, like, come here. And I think I appreciate your willingness to that. And yeah, again, not me visiting here, but you receiving me here, because I was not planning to come here, and I just out of the blue, like, can I go to New Zealand?
Okay.
Well, some other plans were canceled. Okay, so that implies some change of plans, not only for me, but for you as well. So thanks for the flexibility and the adjustment. So go to permanent.